I didn't think I would be back again in the pulpit so soon. I spent the last few years announcing to people, well, that was my last sermon, I'll not be preaching anymore. I think that's a reflection of growing awareness of old age. And as you grow older, you realize that you haven't quite the use of perhaps faculties that you did possess, to some degree anyway, in days that are past. But it's nice to be here. And the reason I requested the reading of Psalm 77, and I'm sure you saw it in it, you'll see in verses 10, 11, 12, the word remembering, meditating, appearing. And tonight is a night of remembering. And it's a remembering what the Lord did. I have to emphasize that. I'm very thankful that I have the memories that I do have, looking back over all those years. But there are memories created by God. It is the works of the Lord that we remember. And we remember with joy that in his great mercy, he just put us there in the midst of those events. Were I to choose a text, it would be from another psalm, Psalm 126, and the verse 3. The Lord hath done great things for us, whereof we are glad. And tonight, whatever I say, I will seek to be stressing the very spirit of that verse. The Lord hath done great things. And I can't really, I suppose, convey to you how often I have looked back with wonderment, thankfulness, that I found myself, by God's grace alone, involved in that which we are trying to remember something about tonight. Pre-Presbyterianism was almost entirely unknown in County Fermanagh when the work began in Lisbonaw. Though strange to relate, I was saved on the 5th of April 1964, and the next Sabbath evening, again, I marvel at the wondrous mercy of God, I accompanied my father and mother, saved, 30-odd years before, and in the case of my father, even further back than that, but never really had gone on with the Lord, and I wouldn't slight them, but I do feel that there really wasn't an opportunity down in Listnaskee, our home area. I was born outside Listnaskee, in a wee place called Kinahe, townland of Kinahe. And there was nothing but the Church of Ireland there, and, well, there was nothing really in the Church of Ireland. My mother told me that when I was baptized by the Church of Ireland minister, I hadn't been very well at birth, and of course, they thought they better get him baptized in case he dies, then he wouldn't go to heaven. There's as much popery in the Church of Ireland as there is in any chapel. Well, she told me that the then minister came, I think his name might have been Anderson, and he baptized me, and then he announced to my mother, "Now let him grow in grace." Well, I grew physically, but I didn't grow in grace. But by the mercy of God, I was saved on the 5th of April. And as I say, the next Lord's Day, the 12th of April, I found myself in company with my father and mother in Dr. Paisley's church in the Ravenhill Road. Now, there are a number of days that are very important to me. The 5th of April, when I got saved. The 12th of April, when I met Ian Paisley. March the 8th, 1968, when I got married. Those are important times, memorable times, each one of which, I have to tell you, I believe was wrought by the hand of God. But on that 12th of April, when I met Ian Paisley for the first time, I rung him up the next day. Back then, his phone number was in the phone book. And I rung him up from Ulster Television the next day and I said, are there any more meetings? And he said, well, there's a meeting tonight. So I went along that to that meeting. I not rehearsed that meeting. It was very memorable for a number of reasons. But in discussion with him, or conversation with him afterwards, brief conversation, I learned from him that he was going to Enniskillen that week. I can't remember what night of that week it was, but I remember him saying he was going to Enniskillen. And that would have been, as far as I know, the only Free Presbyterian meeting of such, although I'm sure it was just a gospel rally, the only Free Presbyterian meeting that had been held in Fermanagh up to then. But when the prison controversy arose in 1966, a rally was organised in Listenski. I was thinking the other day, there's not one person that I know of now that could tell me who it was organised it. I do know that my uncle Willie Foster would have been involved. But if I'm not mistaken, it was held in the parochial hall in the main street in Listenski, and my Uncle Willie wouldn't have been able to get the parochial hall. He was attending an Eelm church at that time. So I'm inclined to make a wild guess that Roy Kells, and I hope I'm not saying anything wrong here or that might in any way annoy the Kells family, but I do believe Roy Kells might have had some influence in the organising of that meeting. But anyway, it took place, and John Douglas and Alan Kearns spoke at it. And on a number of occasions subsequent to the meeting, Alan Kearns told me that of all the rallies he took part in, and he spoke at a lot of the rallies that were taking place during that three-month period, he thought the Listenski rally was the liveliest of them all. I find that strange, because there wouldn't have been any support at that rally by Free Presbyterians. Oh, I'm sure there were Christians there. But it would please the Lord to come down and bless that meeting. Well, as a result, my Uncle Willie used to travel up to the Ulster Hall on occasions. It's a long old run back then. But he travelled up in the evening, in the Sabbath evenings, to hear Dr. Paisley. And towards the end of December, he told Dr. Paisley that there was some interest in starting something down here, and that there was a property in Ispillaw that could possibly be bought. And I remember travelling down with Dr. Paisley and Willie Beattie, after he had finished in the Ulster Hall on a Sabbath evening toward the end of December, to see the hall in Lisbelaw. It was actually a shop and a little store belonging to it. And we crept in round it by torchlight, because you just daren't let it be known that Free Presbyterians were interested. Otherwise, it would have been bought by someone in order to keep us out, or it would have been burned by someone in order to keep us out. In fact, a man came to Dr. Paisley after the meetings had begun, and he confessed that he had been paid money to go and burn the hall. And he actually got as far as Lisbelaw with a gallon of petrol, and his conscience got the better of him. And he didn't go through with it. And instead he contacted Dr. Paisley to tell him that's what he had been encouraged, indeed paid, to do. And I can tell you, it wasn't the Republicans that put him up to it. And I could name the leading unionists who did put him up to it, but I'm not going to. Not that it would make any difference, for they're all dead now. But that was the feeling. So anyway, we saw this hall, thought we could make a hall out of it, and it was valued at £800. And Dr. Paisley said, we can do that all right. So the hall was bought. And I should honour the ladies of Dr. Paisley's congregation. One woman said, I'll help in this venture, and I'll give £1 for every pound that any other woman gives. And it ended up, the whole money was raised. There's a plaque in Bethel Church in the porch that commemorates the actions of those ladies. James O'Sullivan, who at that time I think was ordained in the minister of Sandown Road, was a very handy person, and he was a skilled electrician. And any of you who know his later links with Let the Bible Speak will know that he had a great part to play in setting up the electronics within the studio and all the rest of it. Well, he and I spent about a week down in Lisbelaw rewiring the place and making it suitable for a church building. We stayed with my Uncle Willie out at the townland of Lisnagole, halfway between Maguire's Bridge and Lisnaskee. He used to waken us up every morning, standing outside our bedroom door with a wee melodeum playing gospel hymns in this wee squeeze box. But came the 11th of February, it was a Saturday, it had been advertised. I later in my preaching days laid a great emphasis on advertising, much to the pain of the committee in the early days in Lisbelaw, particularly because they were counting all the pennies. But I believed in letting people know we're here. And I used to take sizable adverts in the Impartial Reporter and put in as startling subjects as I could to create an interest. Well, the event was advertised in the Impartial by a postage size advert, which, well, if you're selling an old duck or a hen or a goose, it was big enough. And that's about all that went into the Impartial at that time. But anyway, the hall was packed on the 11th of February 1967. And Dr. Paisley and the Reverend John Wiley spoke in the afternoon. And then in the evening time, and there still was quite a good congregation, Willie Beattie and then myself preached. And it was announced by Dr. Paisley that the next day, the Lord's Day, there would be the start of a series of gospel meetings at 3:30, and then each night at 8 o'clock. And that was the beginning of the work. Since I came from Fermanagh, the big man, we used to say the presbytery met under his hat back then. And it was very true. And he just said, "Brother, you're in charge here." And that was the end of all discussion. And it was a busy time. And there was nobody more busy than Dr. Paisley. And he might say, "Right, we're going to have a gospel mission." But then he would ring you the first day and say, "Brother, I can't go tonight. You may do it." And I think that happened, I don't know how many times. I looked at my diary and I see that he was there at the beginning of the week. But he didn't appear until close to the end of the week. We even had John Wiley in. But the rest of the time I was there. And it went on for 2 weeks. And after the 2 weeks, a regular afternoon Sabbath service and a Tuesday night prayer meeting was organized. And I think that it's worthy to note that that which began in the manner that it did on the 11th of February was doing so well that by the 26th of March it could be instituted, which means that at the beginning of March, and that was only 2 weeks after the first meeting, at the beginning of March there was a petition before Presbytery asking Presbytery to recognise this group down in Ispillaw as a new congregation and to please organise a constituting of it. And that shows you how quickly things were going in those days. Nothing to do with the individuals. Nothing whatsoever to do with the individuals. If I could start a church now in 2 weeks, I'd be happy to do it. But it's not anything to do with me or any human being. It was the Lord working. And Alan Cairns was down that Lord's Day afternoon, constituted the congregation, and from then on there were 2 services. And I can only tell you that God was pleased to bless the meetings in that old tin hut. It caused a lot of controversy because there were strong anti-ecumenical messages preached, and the people coming in were coming in without having really any understanding of the ecumenical movement and what it was about. They were nearly all belonging to the established churches, and they weren't going to hear anything contrary to the good name of ecumenism, so that there was a great interest. And I used to put adverts into the newspaper designed strictly to stir interest. I was looking through, I still have notebooks that go right back to then, sermon notebooks. And if ever I believed it was God that worked and not the preacher, I only have to look at the notes to see that truth. But one of the sermons I preached was, the reason I wasn't allowed to preach at the annual Methodist conference. Well, of course I hadn't been asked to speak at the local Methodist conference. And I must say that I explained that right away. My opening notes here. I must confess that I have never been asked to preach at the Methodist Conference, nor am I likely to be asked, especially after tonight. But nevertheless, I am sure that I would never be allowed to preach the message that I'm about to preach tonight. And of course, it was a gospel message with an emphasis on denouncing the errors that were taught under ecumenism. Another subject matter I preached upon, and that means you can't use this title, was more bad breath from the lungs of ecumenism. And it was taking some of the statements that the leaders of ecumenism had uttered and examining them in the light of God's word. I can only say that there were lively meetings now in this below, enjoyable meetings. I did like to the court controversy. I enjoyed the battle. I remember one lady, she was a Brethren lady. In actual fact, tomorrow, in the will of God, I'm going to meet the son of my old Ma's teacher, who taught me in 1957, 58, 59 in Ashfield Tech. And I later found out that he belonged to the Brethren, and his son, he died just a month or so ago, and I was in contact with the son, but his son married a wee lassie from Lispelaw, who was many times in our meetings, if not every Lord's Day in our meetings, even though really her family connection was with the Brethren. But I actually have the call that I received from Lispelaw. I don't have the call I received from Kilskerry, but I presume I got one in 1978. But I don't know how I have preserved this one, and all the names there, I was looking down them, and included amongst the signatures is this young lassie that I hope to meet tomorrow's mother, Brethren lady. But oh, she was as supportive of me as I could ever have wished anyone to be. And on one occasion, she was telling me that she was in a shop and the Church of Ireland minister was there. And he was, being king of the castle, he was talking out loud to almost everybody and saying, "What was on in Lispelaw last night?" The Church of Ireland rectory was at the end of Lispelaw, just looking right up the street. He says, "I saw a lot of cars coming out, and what was on?" And this lady, with great joy, said, "Oh, don't you know? That was the new Free Presbyterian Church, and those were the folk leaving it after the evening service." And she then went on to describe the impact of that upon the poor rector. But I can't really describe the joyfulness of meetings there, primarily because the folk were hearing what to them was new and fresh, an application of God's word to what was going on around them in the churches, an explanation of why they could get nothing from their church service, etc., etc. And there was a great flocking, I have to say that, even from across the border. Cavan and Monaghan, people would travel to the evening service in Lispelaw, and God was pleased to make it go forward well, and it was packed out. It would have held packed out about 160, although speakers were put out through the windows, loudspeakers, and people used to sit in their cars and listen. Well, 1967 was my last year as a student, so I, at the end of 67, beginning of 68, I was qualified for a call. And there were those who indicated to Dr. Paisley, who was the senior minister in Lisbonnell, that they would like to have a congregational meeting. They knew something of the procedures now that had to be undertaken. And so early in January, a congregational meeting was arranged, as is the case, to discover whether or not the congregation wished to become a Free Presbyterian congregation. Now, I was at that meeting, along with Dr. Paisley. And I have to say there was quite an enthusiastic indicating that they would like to call me. And Dr. Paisley said, no, you can't enter into that discussion tonight. You're only here to talk about whether you want to be a Free Presbyterian congregation. So, roping them in, as it were, they focused on that matter, and that's when there was an application to presbytery that they would... I should say they weren't there to discuss application to become a Free Presbyterian congregation. That was already established. They were there to discuss whether or not they wanted to call a minister. That's what I should have said. And Dr. Paisley stopped them going on to then name who it was they wanted to call, because the business was, do you want to call a man? That had to be established. Permission then had to be sought from presbytery, and then another meeting convened, and the people could indicate who it was they wanted to call. I'm sorry if I got that slightly wrong. But that's what happened at the beginning of 68. But there were other things went on. And I have to tell you that there were three congregational meetings organized. And the outcome of the first two was that I was rejected. They didn't want me. They didn't really say who it was they wanted, but they didn't want me. But it turned out that this really was a bit of a conspiracy. We'll say no more. But Dr. Bertie Koop came down and told the congregation a few things. And in the end, a majority of people indicated that they wanted to call me. And so I was called, and I was ordained as the minister there in April of 1968. And I had 8 people at my first morning's service. I can't, looking back, I can't say that that devastated me or even disappointed me. I must have been well used to the fact that there was a tide running against me, but I knew it wasn't of God. Two things come to my mind. Two people. One was a good, godly woman who lived in this very district and who was a member here in Kilskerry later years. But whenever I used to visit her, the first words out of her mouth was, Mr. Foster, we had nothing against you. We were told all sorts of stories. You were just coming to Lisbonnell because you wanted to get married and you wanted a house. I never got a house until I came here to Kilskerry. And I entered the manse up there on the 1st of April, 1980. But that dear lady, I used to have to console her and say, look, I know, please don't fret yourself. She was a godly woman. But it vexed her that she'd got caught up in this. And the only reason she got caught up in it was she didn't want to be involved in any church rows. And so when she heard all this going on, she stopped coming. But within a matter of weeks, maybe 6 weeks, the meetings in Lisbalaw were back up to the 160 numbers again. Another man, he became an elder in Enniskillen. He had been attending. And he says that one day he was milking the cows and he came out of the byre and somebody was in the yard to see him and they were chatting away. And he says, have you heard about the row in Lisbalaw? And the man said, no. Oh, it's all over. Big row, it's all over, it's closed. And that man said to me sometime later that he fell down on the ground and wept sore, brokenhearted, for he had thought that this was a work was of God. That consoled me in later years as I thought about these things. And so he started back again, having been told that it was all closed. He investigated a bit and very shortly he was back again and saw that it wasn't finished but it was growing and people were attending well. It's sad that such things happen and that even Christians can get caught up in these things, but in actual fact it's an indication that God was working, that the devil should attack it in that fashion. Oh, there's a whole lot of things I could go on to tell that later showed the mercy of God to some involved in that conspiracy, but I'm not, other than just to assure you that there was a wonderful evidence of God touching hearts and people acknowledging that they were very wrong becoming involved in such things. But the work progressed and advanced. And we had a lot of people professing faith in Christ. I have notebooks from those years and lots of little names at the end of the sermon. People who stayed behind and got saved. There's Harry and Minnie. And they're here tonight and they were saved in Lisbalaw. And they have stuck it well. And I'm pleased to see them here in the meeting this evening. Well, as a result of people coming from various places, there was an interest in those among those folk to have me hold meetings in their areas. It's a great source of amazement to me now. But in 1970, having been over to the late Baskin Boyd's home in Five Mile Town on a number of occasions to speak at a little prayer group that he had, out of that sprang an invitation to come and hold a mission. And out of that mission in 1970. And that's only 3 years after the first meeting in Lisbalaw, a church was formed. And it would take me all night to tell you the fun we had with the council and all the oil ministers in the area when we started putting up the hall on the site that now houses the church building. But they had war. I'll tell you, there was a county council then that met Noman, took in the whole of the county and its affairs. And the chief, I don't know what they would have called him, the chief man in charge of planning, he had ruled that we could not build a church there because we were opening onto the main road. Well, we said, no, we're not. We're opening onto a side road, and the side road leads to the main road. So the controversy raged. And then they said, well, here's a site you could have. And anybody who knows the Clocher Valley church area, as you're heading into Five Mile Town, you're climbing a hill, and near the top of the hill on the right-hand side, there's a wee road. And it runs down round and it comes out opposite the Clocher Valley Church. And they said, well, you could get a site in there. And we said, well, what would be the difference? We would be opening up onto a side road and coming out onto the main road, only the other side of the main road. What's the difference? Which, of course, there wasn't. So we said, we'll just stick with our site, which had been given to us. And then I discovered that this man lived in a bungalow. He had built the bungalow in what used to be the main road from the Clocher Valley up to Belfast. You went up and joined the motorway at Dungannon. And when you got to Ballygolly, there was a back road. Now there's a nice, almost like a motorway from Ballygolly up to Dungannon. But then there was this wee bendy road. And about less than a mile from Ballygolly, as you're climbing out of Ballygolly, there was a hill. There was a big loch down in the hollow, and here was this beautiful bungalow sited so that it had the view of the loch. Lovely! But it came out onto the main road. So we presented the council with this anomaly and said, whatever rule allowed that man to do that, we want that rule to apply to us as well. And that ended the story. Those were lovely days, you know. Ah, we know nothing about the wars and the joys of war today. But those were thrilling because that rippled right through the area among the people, not interested in church, gospel, God or the Bible. But they got caught up with this, and that drew them to the meetings. And so Clocher Valley got on their way. The next year, some man from Monaghan said, would you come up? And so we went up to Monaghan. And we had a mission in the little orange hall at Corrigarry. Well, the first thing we had to do, and I don't intend to insult the orange men of Corrigarry, but the first thing we had to do was cut down the briars and around the doors in order to get into the hall. I remember there was a briar growing in. You know what briars are like? They can grow forever. And it could come right over the wee loft and down into the church. And it was about 40 foot long. Part of the harvesting that we had to engage in just to get things ready. I remember preaching one night and there was a couple of, there was no electricity, tilly lamps. And, well, you probably don't even know what a tilly lamp is, but it's a little lamp, you fill it with paraffin oil, pump it, put the oil under pressure, and it comes through a little jet and vaporizes, and if you get it lit, oh, lovely light. But if you don't have everything working perfectly, it starts playing up. And one night I remember preaching away, and the light went off, and instead there was this cloud of vaporized paraffin, and I was afraid of it all catching fire. But nobody moved, and this was hissing away and blowing away until I had to stop preaching and say, look, would some of you men take that thing and throw it out? But that was the joy of preaching back in those days. Well, Corrigarry started then. And the work was doing well. I sat down one evening some time ago, started to think about missions. And really, we had a lot of missions in this area. I'd forgotten a lot of them, but I started going through my diary for another purpose, and as I was going through the diary, I said, oh, there's a mission, oh, there's a mission. And God was working wonderfully. Bethel opened in 1972, because while Clogher Valley and Carrigarry was going on, the building of Bethel was taking place. Then here in Kilskerry, 2 years after that, 1974, this hall, this main part of the hall, was built, and the work began. It had already really begun in an old tin orange hall that's no longer really in existence, but folk were meeting there, praying and holding children's meetings from around this area here. Then Kesh came along. We had a mission in Kesh in 1976. We often laugh because it was a stormy time of the year, and we had a tent, and it was forever blowing down, and you got word from the police in the middle of the night that the tent was down. In fact, one policeman had rung up that many times, he got the message mixed up, and he said, "You're down as tented," when he rung me up on the phone. And Mr. George Somerville, Jackie Neville, I used to ring them up in the middle of the night, and then off we go to salvage this tent. Then, in 1975 or 76, I was asked to take meetings on the fringes of Philadelphia. And I always count this as part of the influence of the work that God began in Lispelaw. And we travelled out there for a month, and we repeated that the next year and the next year until, I think it was 1977 or 78, that a congregation was constituted in Newtown Square. Now, much of the honour and praise for the labours done in that work must go to the late Mr. Bob McNeil. He had gone out to America as a young man of 18 from Ballymoney, had got saved there, and had sought to witness and work for the Lord. He heard about the prison, and when Dr. Paisley and myself in September 1969, went out to America at the invitation of Dr. Carr McIntyre, Bob McNeil and his wife Anne met us. And that was the first time we met them. But then in the early 70s, we started this yearly visit. And that work flourished. Particularly it flourished when the Reverend John Greer took over as pastor. And it flourished so well that the farmhouse in which it was situated at the beginning couldn't contain those who were interested, and they bought another church that must be about 20 miles away, I suppose, that was up for sale, and that is now Malvern Free Presbyterian Church. But I, if I might be forgiven, always thought of it as part of the outreach that began in Lispelaw. And for all these things, we're very, very thankful that God thus began to work. I think as I look back to those days, I'm made to realize what mercies God bestowed on Ulster at that time. I think it's hard for anybody outside of Northern Ireland to understand how the controversy surrounding the 3 month jail should have been the means of creating an interest in the gospel to such a degree that really we saw revival blessing. And I'll not be telling any secrets when I say, but very recently I was explaining this to some visitors from England. And as I was excitedly telling them about the events of 1966 and jail and everything else, it was as if the Lord whispered in my ear, "These are English folk. And they'll wonder how on earth this could have any part in the advancing of the cause of God." And I thought to myself, well, I better try and explain that God takes up these things oftentimes. And I asked a question, have any of you heard of Jenny Geddes? And one member of that family group had. Yes, she's the lady who threw a stool at a preacher. I said, yes. And that was the beginning of the Second Reformation in Scotland. That godly, poor woman, for she was sitting on a stool because she probably couldn't afford the fees that would be required in order for you to have a place in a pew. So she was sitting among the poor on a stool. And the minister up in the pulpit, Church of England, Episcopalian anyway, the King, Charles II, had imposed upon Scotland Episcopalianism and abolished Presbyterianism. And Jenny Geddes, as soon as this man began to read basically what would be the morning book of prayer and the litany and all the rest of it, Jenny hopped up, took her stool, fired it at the minister and said, "You'll no say the mass at my lug." Now, purists might say, "Oh, that's terrible." But God was pleased to use that incident. And historians have wonderfully recorded it. It's the beginning of what is known as the Second Reformation in Scotland. And thus I was able to explain to my English friends, as strange as it may appear, the controversial imprisonment in 1966 generated an atmosphere of interest, a questioning among those who really had no links to the gospel or to God, but which in their questioning they came to hear what was going on. And as I said, down in Listenskee during the imprisonment, Alan Kearns, John Douglas preached. And that's what gave rise then to an interest which generated the purchasing of that wee hall and the congregation that was begun there 59 years ago. 59 years ago. And tonight, speaking to you, I have much to be thankful for. A lot of things I don't understand. I don't understand why someone who had been saved not that long, out of total ignorance, I knew nothing about the gospel, but I should find myself blessed of God, mercifully enabled to preach at that time. I look back on that and still marvel. I marvel at it. I can't explain to you how ignorant I was of the things of God. I started as a student in the theological hall on the 5th of January, 1965. I never did anything like anyone else. It wasn't planned. When I met with Presbytery, Dr. Paisley, in December 64, Dr. Paisley said, "You can start in January." So I did. But it wasn't too long there until he said to me, "Brother, you know nothing. You'll come and live with me." So there again, I did what no other student that I know of did. For 6 months I lived in his house and taxied him about all over Ulster. I think really that's what I was there to do. But what a privilege it was. What a privilege it was. I mentioned that I got married in March 68. Before I was ordained, and the rule in Presbytery was you have to get ordained before you get married. But Ian Paisley was my friend. And I think he let me away with things and organised things in my favour many times. That's one of the reasons why I look back with such love and affection for Ian Paisley. Oh, I know. I opposed what happened in 2007. But I opposed that because I loved that man. I did not want him to do what he did, and which resulted in the closing years of his life that were not what I had always imagined his final days to be like. But we had a week of meetings last week. Maybe it's just an old man's fanciful notions, but I think there were others too who felt something of the stirring of what took place years ago. My heart was greatly encouraged by those meetings and the preachers who came along, and I saw the spark's not dead. The fire's not completely extinguished. I remember chaining myself to Buckingham Palace one time at a protest. In fact, I came on the message we preached at that time. There was a mass said in Buckingham Palace. If I'm not mistaken, the old Queen Mother was there. And a number of us were there to protest, and the late Jack Glass and myself, we chained ourselves to Buckingham Palace railings, just as a protest against what was going on. And I feel that, so get your chain out, brother, I feel that those days are coming back. Days of protest. Free Church led the protest against ecumenism. Ecumenists feared the Free Church. Feared the Free Church. They did. Oh, what times I remember Ian Paisley confronting them and making absolute idiots of them. They couldn't answer them a word. Because the power of God was upon that little gathering of non-entities. And the enemy trembled just as the great Goliath fell at the hands of a shepherd boy who had been despised by his own brother and likely many more around that brother. And the free church was despised in those days, mocked in those days. I remember trying to hire the town hall in Enniskillen, where a short time before, Bernadette Devlin had had a rally. And they did a lot of damage on it. And it was some time after I tried to hire the hall, and they asked of me £2,000 to hire the hall. Now, multiply that a number of times and you'll get today's value. Probably up £10,000, £12,000, £15,000 was being asked in today's money. And, of course, we didn't get it. Couldn't afford it. But that was the treatment unionists dished out to Free Presbyterians back then. And here we are 59 years later. And I think we can adopt the words of old Latimer when they were burning him at the stake. He said to his fellow martyr, Mr. Ridley, he says, be of good courage. Because under God, by his mercy, we light a candle today in England that will never go out. Oh, I preached on that too. I was looking at my notes. England's candle burns very low. And it's only a flicker now, but it's not altogether out. We had a brother here on the Lord's Day morning who was from England, living in England, although he was originally from here, but he was been living in England probably the most of his life. And he tells of the struggles he has to find a place to worship. But there are places. And we have many Christian friends over there that stand for the Lord. The candle is burned low, but it hasn't burned out, and God can make it flame again, certainly here in Ulster. I just hope we have given you some cause to thank the Lord for his kindness and mercy, because we're meeting here tonight as a result of that mercy that he poured out many, many years ago. Brother, I'll just ask you to, I don't know what time it is, to take over and lead in a time of prayer or whatever. Thank you. God bless you, and thank you for listening.